Reynolds, who have not finished races well in the past, are going to do it today. Here they come another time.
Welcome to F1WP.com. My name is Mark Rogers. I'm the host of the program.
I've been a fun fan for years.
F1WP.com podcast.
We're going to do tire changes maybe next year. I think we can.
Hi, this is Desiree. I'm your fabulous, fierce female Formula One fan.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. This is podcast number 1112, September 15th, 2025. Steven.
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads bring you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Ferrari jackets to Renault hats, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, Yahoo Ads. On today's program, Max Verstappen gets his Nordschleifer license. And I'm telling you, this was a huge deal. Lance Stroll says absolutely nothing, grimaces a little bit at post-race interview. Sainz gets his Dutch penalty rescinded, and Fernando seems to be Max's favorite driver. And this week, in the Nasser Hamid corner, we have Derek Walters, great racing heritage, and a young Lance Stroll. Very hilarious. And yes, indeed, we do need your contributions to keep this program up there in the cloud. So please click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. So there you have it. The big news, there were cameras. It was talked about all week long since we didn't have a race. Max has done it. He has gotten his Nordschleifer license. And I admit, I don't know that much about this group, but apparently they are not the kind of friendly people that just give out honorary licenses. You have to earn them. Max had to follow an instructor for a full lap while the instructor instructed Max about all the racing line, the dangers, the fun spots. And Max had to, you know, just absorb it. He had to pretend that he was a student. And he was a student. And he wants to learn absolutely everything there is in the world about motorsports. So he was a good student. He got his license. And I think it was a good experience for everybody. The Nordschleifer is now building another 50,000-seat grandstand just for the extra load of all these people coming to watch the NLS races for the next few months. And I think this is great. It's great for Germany. It's great for the economy. And it's great for the Nordschleifer. I mean, they are a pretty busy place because you can pay to drive your car around the Nordschleifer. I mean, it's nonstop work over there. But I'm very proud of Max. And it reminds me of Fernando when he did the Indy 500. Led many laps until the Honda package exploded, done blown up. And don't forget, Fernando has won Le Mans 24 Heures. So yes, I'm glad to see somebody else being machismo. So that was very, very exciting. And of course, the big news, Sainz. He couldn't believe that he got this penalty. And sure enough, it's been rescinded. The FIA have agreed with Williams, and this is good news for everybody because Sainz was stressing out about this, and he's not having a great season. And ladies and gentlemen, the biggest problem with Sainz signing with Williams, you may never get back to a top team. It could be hard to do. I don't know. Now we have Bottas back in the limelight. We have Perez back. And so, once again, You could be at Williams for many years, so just deal with it. Now, I am a little disappointed. I expected a little bit of more progress, but They are in the top 10 often, so let's just slow down, tip our hat to Williams, and say good luck, gentlemen. Of course, now we're really now on the downturn. We're thinking about 2026. We're going to hear more about 2026 and all the excitement with Red Bull and the new Ford package. That is going to be building up because that's really an unbelievable feat if they can pull it off. And of course, all eyes are on Zak Brown, McLaren, and whether it's interesting, and we'll see how it goes. But even Piastri, you know, it sort of goes with his demeanor. He's not one of those, you know, get super pissed off guys, sort of like, you know, we've seen in the past with some of these former world champions. So we could have a very mellow yellow submarine as a world champion. And that's the way it is. It could be better for natural foods. I don't know. But like Toto Wolff said it, we all need an asshole to hate. Now, now that Christian Horner's gone, and we have this love festival going on at McLaren. I mean, I saw the best thing the other day. Lando Norris broke up with his girlfriend. So they're going to ask Piastri, to keep it fair, to break up with his girlfriend. That's how ludicrous everything has gotten. So, ladies and gentlemen, and I know, I don't want to mock the system, but I'm with Toto. I'm with Robin Miller, who once said, hate is good for racing. So let's hope we can get a little more hate into this wonderful world. And let's not forget to mention that Isaac Hajar had a big French festival at Manicourt, Ralph Schumacher's favorite track. And lots of fun in front of his people. It was a Red Bull festival. I think they dressed up the RB7 as today's Visa Cash App Racing Red Bull or Racing Bulls. And it was a lot of fun. And Manicourt is a great track. A lot of activities there all the time. And it's too bad we can't get Formula One going back to Manicourt. But it is what it is. So there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Max has got his license. Sainz got rid of his penalty. And everybody's happy in the world so far. And I'm only talking about motorsports. So there you go. Let's head right into the Nasser Hamid corner. We have Derek Walters. This is a big interview. And it happens in Sepang. That's the international jet setter, Nasser Hamid. And of course, we have a young Lance Stroll, and I'm telling you, it's fascinating, it's fun, and you could hear the innocence, but the courage and the guts and the talent. You could tell him as a young man, he's winning a lot of championships, and he's very good, but he explains why he's winning so much. There are reasons for everything, and it may have made him look a lot better than he really is. It doesn't matter. Enjoy the conversations, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, and we'll talk to you next weekend for Baku.
Hello, I'm Stinger Rob, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by the Podium Fresh Rose Water of the Bahrain Grand Prix.
And special interview with Derek Walters. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you, sir. Hope all is well with our familia, global familia. What a great, fantastic race. The opening laps, the closing laps.
Yep.
I am loving it.
It was a sandwich. Great excitement at the beginning. We have tire management in the middle with a little lettuce, tomato, and some mayo.
It's a falafel in Bahrain. Okay?
It is. Pardonnez-moi. Yes, you're right. Falafel. And then at the end, more excitement when everybody is allowed to race, except for Sebastian Vettel, where they told him to keep it in control.
Some went out of control and over-raced.
Some people did. They had to because
the heat was on.
Yeah, the heat was on. Their testicular fortitude was questioned.
Oh, my God.
Yes, and we know what happens here. In this studio, when testicular fortitude is questioned, you are fired.
Oh, wow.
Yes, exactly. So there you have it, Nask. Fantastic Grand Prix. Great fun. Not a great venue for me, I'm not sure. And not enough protesting.
Well, that is true. But now they are saying that next year it will be the 10th anniversary and they may do a night race. That's the latest talk from Bahraini officials. And then it will be easier because, for them at least, less visibility for the protesters.
That's true. That's true. But I saw no protesters, Nasser.
Well, they took care of the problem.
Yeah, they did take care of the problem. And I sort of like that style of government.
Yeah, it's called dictatorial. What I say goes.
Exactly. Thank you, El Duce.
Yes. Well, a moment with Massa. Felipe, since joining Ferrari, has been teammate to Schumacher, Raikkonen and Alonso. That is like being on the same team as Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson and LeBron James. And your coach is asking, what are you doing? You know, I mean, that's a tough order for this kid. So here's a question from the Bahrain press conference put to Felipe Massa.
Dan Knutson, Auto Action and National Speed Sport News. A question for Felipe. By now, you're very used to having a world champion as a teammate. Describe to us the challenges, the pressures, and the satisfaction of working with and competing against a guy who is the champion and therefore one of the best in the world.
Yeah, I think for sure I had most of my career a strong teammate, you know. I think many people said, it's not good to have, but I think it's positive. I mean, I think you always need to do the best you can. But if you don't do the perfect job, you know you're going to be behind, you know. So, and I think in terms of experience, you learn a lot, you know, by working with a good teammate, you know, strong driver. To be honest, he's from... maybe most of you guys or many people around the world is maybe everybody's talking about him as the best driver, you know. So, you know, you have a lot to do. You have a very important job, you know, and I think that's good. I mean, it's always, you're always on the pressure, you know, because you need to do, you need to be perfect every day, you know. But I think... I think it's nice, I think it's important, and we always need to grow, you know, we always need to get better and better, and that's what I'm trying to do all the time.
And now, how about some history about this Bahrain thing?
Bahrain Grand Prix. The first F1 race in the Arab world since the 1958 Moroccan Grand Prix. A Tilke masterpiece, the track is known as BIC. Flick up big Bahrain International Circuit, not too far from the capital of kingdom, as they call it, Manama. The inaugural event in 2004 saw a Ferrari front row and top two steps of the podium. Rubinho was second to the Red Baron, Herr Schumacher. Sato San was fifth in this race and Monty was 13th in a Williams. How sands of time have shifted. You know what I'm saying?
They do shift.
Yes. In 2005, Nando won from pole in his Renault. Ralf Schumacher was fourth for Toyota, while his teammate Trulli came in second. The following year, Bahrain was the season opener, and Nando won again, this time after starting fourth. Poleman Schumacher was second, and Raikkonen was third after starting 22nd. This was the season when McLaren was having one day the right rear view mirror will fall off, then the next and the next race. There was a lot of problems in those days. In 2007, the top three qualifiers, sounds familiar, also finished in that order. Massa winning over Hamilton and Raikkonen. 2008 saw two in a row for Massa. In 2009, it was Button in a Brown in Bahrain. You know what I remember most from the Bahrain Grand Prix is when your man Nando was leading. I don't know if he was leading, but I think he was. And they're coming to the first corner, and here comes Massa in his Ferrari sliding right across his car, in front of his car. Do you remember that race?
Oh, yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. Close call. In 2010, Bahrain was again the season opener. Nando wins first time out with Ferrari. Massa was second. Need I say more? With Antonio Liuzzi was ninth for Force India. The race has seen some interesting pole positions over the years. In 2008, Robert Kubica started first for BMW Sauber and came in third behind Massa and Raikkonen. The following year, it was the Trulli train that left the platform on time from pole position and also finished third. The race was not held in 2011 due to some natives getting restless. And last year, the podium saw same faces and same places as the Grand Prix last Sunday. And there you have it, the historia of Bahrain.
Well, thanks, Nas. Keep up the good work for that info. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I am Takuma Sato. You're listening to F1 Weekly.
Bonjour. Want to stay in a charming accommodation near the historic and famous Cognac and Bordeaux regions of southwestern France? Imagine yourself surrounded by the rolling hills and vineyards of the Charente region, sipping on cognac or the local aperitif Pinot de Charente. Opening in June 2012, Bassinon offers traditional French country lodging in rustic stone cottages, fully equipped with modern comforts, suitable for families, travelers, or groups. Share a home-cooked meal with your host and soak in the ambiance and joie de vivre of the tranquil and rural French countryside. Bassinode is only a 90-minute drive from the Bordeaux airport or 30 minutes from the nearest train station in Angoulême. Navigate to bassinode.com for information or to book a reservation now. That's BASSINAUD.com. Allons-y!
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the guru himself, Nasser Hamid.
Greetings and racing regards. Headlines from the weekend. Mexican uprising in Manama. Sato-san slays them all in Southland. And coming soon, very important, Clark, world premiere of Ballad of 07. And we shall explain gladly. Are you ready for some moment in motorsports history?
Yes.
A race I watched in front of a TV, maybe like 6 inches away early morning, and just could not believe what was happening, even halfway through the race. April 21, 1985. One of the greatest maiden wins was scored on this day when Ayrton Senna took victory in heavy rain to win the Portuguese Grand Prix. Driving a Lotus Renault, he lapped the entire field except second-place Ferrari of Michele Alboreto. That was a fantastic way to win your first race. Do you remember? You have to remember it was Renault power.
I know. Lotus F1. Renault.
Yes, sir. So, what are we going to do now? Tech Talk by Tim or the interview? Choice is yours.
I think we should go ahead and do the interview and save the goodies after the interview. And, of course, we'll have 50 words from the forum.
Okay, so we're doing the interview now?
Yeah.
Okay, this interview is with a gentleman from England, Mr. Derek Walters. And he has worked in the United States before, has been involved in motor racing almost all his professional life, and it was very good to chat with him. He is basically in charge of this program, which I think is a very good program. I wish, you know, we had this similar thing in the U.S., a program called Racing Steps Foundation. It's, British racing enthusiasts, you know, have money to spend, and they are spending it very wisely on very talented British young drivers. Jack Harvey is one of them, a karting kid. Bernie Code is there. Collado, James Collado, who is in GP2, he's being supported by them. And, we talk about his experience and the program and how things happen there. So I want to thank him for his time. And hopefully listeners will get a little behind the scene look at one of the important racing programs in motor racing right now called Racing Steps Foundation. And I would like to thank him for his time.
Okay, I'm here in Sepang with Mr. Derek Walters, Chief Executive of World Sport Management. Derek, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today, sir?
Well, we're good until the start of the GP2 race, and our driver, James Calado, had an excited moment and unfortunately had a coming together with another car, and so put him out on the first lap, which is not the result we were looking for.
Now, weather here in Kuala Lumpur is very different than in Kent countryside. How did you adjust to the warm weather here?
Well, we had the first day of spring last week, and I think ever since then the weather has deteriorated in the UK. I think they're covered in the white stuff at the moment and nigh on 0 degree temperatures. And of course, we come out here with ambient temperatures of 30 degrees plus and track temperatures in the 40s. And the other thing, which is a killer here, of course, is the high humidity. So as part of James's preparation, we use the Porsche Performance Center at Silverstone. And there they have heat chambers, so James would do an hour of cycling in the heat chamber with ambient temperatures in the area of 40 degrees and also with the humidity. And he will be closely monitored during that hour, heart rate, temperature, body temperatures, etc. And we've noticed the five sessions he had towards the end, his heart rate came down substantially and his body internal temperature didn't go as high. So from one extreme to the other, but I think the preparation certainly worked.
Now, we all know jolly old England is the center of motor racing, and you're affiliated with Racing Step Foundation. But before we talk about this foundation, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how long you've been involved in motorsports?
Oh, probably more years I care to remember, really. I was with Pirelli for a number of years, and I was moved to Milan in the 80s, and was probably the last guy to sign a contract with Colin Chapman. That was in the October, and unfortunately Colin passed away in the December. After Milan, I served time in America with Pirelli and lived in California up in the offices in San Jose, and I ran Pirelli in North America for a time. So we had a brilliant press conference, I remember, at Great Universal City in Hollywood. And I have very fond memories of America and the American people, and the terrific opportunity you have there if you get your act together to actually do good business. And it was a very responsive environment in which to work.
Now, Pirelli office used to be very close to the San Jose airport, and a friend of mine used to work there.
Yeah, that's where I was. I used to be watching the planes taking off and landing, in between working, of course, but it was a good place to be because we could fly straight down to John Wayne Airport, where we had the advertising and PR agencies, and it was a great place to live because we were going up over the Golden Gate Bridge up into Napa Valley, and I certainly enjoyed my glass of wine, and that was a good experience.
That's good. Did you enjoy hot dogs and cheeseburgers also?
Well, occasionally, but I have a habit of putting on weight these days, so something has to be watched with care, I think.
Okay, now, how long have you been with Racing Steps Foundation?
Well, I was approached by a gentleman by the name of Graham Sharp, who'd been in the commodities industry, one of the founders of the Trafigura Group. Graham is a real motorsport hothead and petrol head, and likes to do quite a bit to help young people who are perhaps disadvantaged and haven't got the means to follow their career path. He's doing quite a lot at Oxford University and helping state school children without the means but with the ability to get into the university. And then we met, and he said, I'd like to help some young guys in the UK that have got talent but no money. And that was in the spring of 2007, and we had our first active year of the foundation in 2008. James we picked for, he hadn't driven a single-seater car at that time, and we picked him to enter the 2-litre championship Renault in the UK, and he did particularly well in that 2 years. Went on to Formula 3, then we joined ART in France for GP3, and he and Bottas vied for the championship that year, and then James was in GP2 last year, and he's got a second year in GP2 this year.
Now, when he was picked up, was he picked up because of his karting achievements?
Yeah, he'd been a very keen karter, and I don't know if you guys know a chap named Martin Hines, who unfortunately Martin passed away 2 years ago, I guess this August, and that Martin had a wonderful eye for talent. Lewis Hamilton had been through him on the karting side, David Coulthard, and so on and so forth. And when we founded the foundation, then we were looking for people to have an input in terms of the talent out there. And he said, you should have a look at James Gallardo. He's something very different and very special. And so we did exactly that. And following on for that, we've had Jack Harvey, who was also under Martin's wing, and Jay Dennis, who we won the World Under 18 Karting Championship, etc. So Martin seems to have been part and parcel of our lives since the foundation was started in 2007.
Okay. Now, do you pick up drivers before they get into single-seaters, or is there a criteria that if you are this age, we won't look at you, or what are the criteria?
Well, I think we certainly pay attention to the age they are and where they are in various championships. As you can see with Vettel, they get younger and younger, and they're making the top spots. So I think one has to pay attention to that. I got three young guys in karting this year in the UK with Zipkart, Martin's old company, and I've got somebody in the name of Ben Barnicote, who's racing with ART in karting in Europe, a highly talented young man. He's 16. Then we've got Oliver Rowland, Jake Dennis. They're in 2 litre Euro Cup this year, and then Jack Harvey, as I said earlier, GP3, and James in GP2. And then on top of that, we've got three guys in motorcycling. One's just moved up, John McPhee, who's in the middle of Scotland, and he'll be joining the Moto3 World Championship this year.
Now, Lewis Williamson is also a young talented Scottish driver. Have you looked at him, or has he been through your program?
He hasn't been through our program. He won the Autosport Award and went in the direction, I think, of Red Bull for a time, and so he never really came on our agenda. I'm not too certain whether he'd have met the criteria in terms of his parents' financial situation or not. You know, most of our parents are certainly pretty poor, and we try to get them on board before they mortgage their house in order to keep their kids running in motorsport, which I think is a principle we disagree with.
Now, talking of Red Bull, sounds like your program, and I say this because I don't hear that a guy has been dropped by Racing Steps Foundation middle of the season. I'm hoping that your program is a lot more kinder and gentler than Red Bull, Marco's machete all the time.
Yeah, I haven't been on a Dr. Marco course, that's for sure. I think for us, it's been quite important to be very careful about the selection. If the selection's been quite right, then I try to nurture them in two directions. One is their racing career and what happens in the car and what's necessary for them to learn to drive quickly and well and competitively. On the other side is the development of the individual, and if you ignore that, I think you ignore quite an important part of the total package. And we're very keen on education. We won't support these guys if they're not paying due attention to their scholarly responsibilities.
What will you do if a young talented driver says to you or your program, leave me alone, I know what I'm doing?
Well, if they do and they are getting the results, then maybe I might take a deep breath and listen. But these guys have always got something to learn, and I think they're pretty respectful of the environment in which they're in. You know, we're fairly clear on our expectations. They're on an annual contract, and they need to achieve. And if they don't achieve, then you know, it's subject to a discussion and maybe the end of the relationship. But generally speaking, we've been very fortunate, and the boys have made good, steady progress through the structure. And I hope they continue to do that. I think that's important. And, you know, James, this is his sixth year with the foundation, and he'll be moving on, you know, hopefully to a professional drive somewhere in Formula One or DTM or whatever.
In terms of expectation, obviously this is a performance-based program, as it should be. Is it, when the season starts, is it the same for all drivers that, hey, you got to be in the top three, or you have a different criteria for different series, different drivers?
I don't think I've got anything written in tablets of stone. I think that's probably wrong. I mean, if you look at Collado last year, he could have been in contention with the championship, you know, but we changed four tyres in Barcelona rather than two. That cost us a win in the feature race in Valencia, we had a 17-second lead. We were the only guys not to have pitted when the not only one safety car, but two other safety cars came out, and that destroyed the strategy completely. He didn't have a very good car in Bahrain and in Monza, so that was pretty well out of his remit. And Silverstone, he was on to win the feature race, and we had a sensor and a gearbox issue. So that's the type of thing, basically, where the driver has no control. But on the other hand, you saw James being very competitive, driving well, impressing a lot of people, also in the pit lane in Formula One, and therefore you take a much more subjective, all-rounded view on that.
Now, taking James Calado just as an example, because he's been with the program for 6 years, safe to assume you folks have invested over maybe $3 to $5 million. How does the repayment of this money, is there a contract like with management team, you know, you're booked for 10 years, how does it work?
Well, we just book them on an annual basis, but we do give them a statement of the amount of money we've invested in them in any 1 year, and that's accumulated over the period there with the foundation. And just as a principle, should they start to earn more than 100,000 sterling a year, then they would start to pay back the foundation rate of 10%. I mean, the ideal thing is that somebody like Calado would reach the top, earn a few millions, realise basically he's only there because of the foundation, and would be fairly sympathetic then to supporting the programme and other young people coming into it in future years.
Now, in terms of funding, is this privately funded, or is there support from BP and other British companies?
No, it's totally privately funded by Graham Sharp, and so he's wanted to put something back, and he was on the phone last night talking to James and I, and I'll see him in London on Tuesday before I think he's flying off to China on business on Wednesday. So he's a pretty busy guy, and we don't have any politics in the foundation. There's no particular kind of structure, and so there's an element of freedom in which to work. He's a very quick decision maker. We have a discussion, give him my opinion, and he has his, and it's a yay or nay pretty quickly. So we haven't got to go to committees or anything, and I think that's part of the strength of what we are and what we can do and what we can achieve. And I think we've had nearly 390 single-seater starts since the foundation inauguration, and I think we've nearly had 48% of those on the podium. So it's been a pretty awesome record.
Right. Now, going back to your days with Pirelli and we're signing a contract with Colin Chapman, did he ever tell you how to make tires lighter?
Well, I think we probably did make tyres lighter then. I mean, we were using, because that's the years of the tyre wars, and there were some pretty sophisticated specifications, you know, multi-compound tyres, varying kind of structures, including Kevlar and steel and nylon and so on and so forth. So there's a much higher element of experimentation then, because, you know, you had to turn things around within a week, within a fortnight, and come to the circuit with something new. And, of course, it was the days, I guess, of turbocharging, 1.5 litres. I tend to remember the BMW engine in the Brabham was producing something like 1,200 brake horsepower in qualifying, and we had tyres which lasted a lap to absorb the energy and put some rubber on the road. So, and then we scrapped the tyres, they scrapped the engines. But the sport has grown up a lot since then, and those days are now over, I guess, in that sense. But there was something very beneficial about being in a competitive environment, because that's when you really push the technology on very quickly and smoothly. We're in a slightly different game now with one tyre in the championship. You can set the specifications, you haven't got to change it, you're only racing against yourself, and that's brought some peculiar arguments and debates about the whole element now of racing. I was talking to somebody in Mercedes recently, and they said, well, last year we had one guy looking after tyre technology, and now we've got six, and so the teams are having to spend money to understand how the tyres are working, and it's not so different here in GP2. I mean, it's quite an issue, and quite restrictive on the freedom to just go out and race, I think.
Now, were you with Pirelli and at Paul Ricca when Piquet won in the Brabham?
That was the last time we did win. There was a fairly significant political moment as well, and I think we were on the verge of packing up then, and then Piquet won, and all was forgiven, and we had a party back at the factory. So it was an interesting time. Yeah.
In all the years you followed motor racing, tell me the top two or three motor races or motor racing events that you remember or that come to mind, and who would you rate as... let's put it this way. If you had a Formula One team, and all the time you have been following motor racing, who would you pick as two drivers from all time?
Well, that's a big question. There's been so many talented individuals over the years, and I guess for a lot of the years I was with Pirelli, I was much more involved on the rally side, which I and they're the heady days of the Group B cars, and when rallying was a really significant world championship, and those boys are very different, and us working with the Vatanens and the Mikulas and Kankanens of this world, and that was really exciting. On the single seater side, I remember we had a contract with Tolman, and that really kind of pulled us into F1 from the Formula 2 Tolman days. And I remember being at Silverstone when Senna had his first Formula 1 drive, and in a Tolman car, which is and that was significant. And you just saw the elements of that young man and his sensitivity as to what was going on in the car, even though he'd never driven it before. And you know, he'd bring it in after a few laps and said, you know, there's something changed here. It's not tyres, it's not this. He's very analytical. Maybe it's a downforce on the rear axle. And we checked the rear wing and it had moved a couple of centimetres or something, and he picked it up. I mean, just an extraordinary individual. And I think to see him race was sheer poetry. And on the other hand, I mean, Nigel Mansell we had at Lotus, but obviously had his heady days at Williams, and Nigel was just a really strong physically and mentally individual and driver, and he put his heart on his sleeve, I think, and went for it. And Nigel was again very exciting, very dynamic at that time, as Lewis is today. I think you know, some of these drivers, when they go on track, you get a sense of expectation that they're going to make something happen, and they have the ability to do that.
Yeah. In your association with Mansell at Lotus, did you ever see him and Peter Warr smiling together?
No. In fact, that became quite interesting, because I had in the contract that we had to have a say on the drivers, and Nigel used to be ringing me quite often in Milan saying if he made any decision about drivers, because he knew probably his life was on the line with Peter Ward. But you know, Nigel survived, whether it was through our influence or not, I don't know, and went on to achieve great things, you know, both in America, of course, and on the Formula One stage. And I see him, you know, occasionally now, and he's a good man. And even when he's a steward here at the F1 meetings, he's a very sound counsel for that. And he has a good eye for what's right and good, I think, in terms of racing.
I really appreciate your time. Finally, we have listeners all over the world, quite a few in UK. How about a message to our listeners?
Well, we hope obviously all the foundation boys actually make it to the top. It's been an awesome program. There's been nothing like it, as far as I know, that's been established. It's been an incredible journey for us. You know, we've got 10 boys now, and they're all doing well. They've all got set objectives, and for me, it's a pleasure just to see them taking advantage of that and getting the results. And hopefully, they'll turn that into a stable and fruitful career going forward. And that's what life is all about at the end of the day, isn't it? If you've got the focus and the determination, it's amazing what you can achieve.
Thank you very much, sir.
Pleasure.
Derek, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser, now we have our favorite episode of
Tech Talk by Tim.
And this is good stuff. Kwanda exhaust, Nas.
Yes, sir. This is good stuff, as is anything else from him when he's contributing to this wonderful podcast, and we certainly appreciate that. And Tim, as we have mentioned, is a student at Stanford, and who knows, pretty soon he might be at JPL or Boeing or Airbus, I don't know. But we hope that he will continue to make this fine contribution wherever he is. And we might see him at Spa-Francorchamps during a Formula One race this year.
That's fantastic, Nas.
So please enjoy this Tech Talk by Tim, and we thank you for your cooperation.
Hello, F1 Weekly. This is Tim. I have a really quick, fun, and yes, safe experiment for you. Okay. Take a tiny little piece of paper and roll it into a small ball about the size of a pea. Put this piece of paper on a table at about half an arm's length away. Now blow on the piece of paper and see what happens. Not surprisingly, it moves directly away from you. Okay, now set it up again, and this time place a glass on the table between you and the paper. A clear glass works best so you can see what's happening. Now again, blow towards the paper, and amazingly, the paper still moves directly away from you, even though it's hiding behind the glass. clearly the airflow is bending around the curved glass and reaching the paper on the other side. Okay, let's really test this idea of bending airflow. Place the piece of paper behind the glass one more time, but this time blow along the side of the glass. What happens? If you've lined everything up properly, you should see the paper moves away diagonally, as if the airflow is wrapping around the glass and hitting the paper at an angle. This is actually exactly what's happening, and this is the Coanda effect. You've probably heard about Coanda exhaust and how teams have been trying all kinds of tricks to use this effect to benefit their cars. Coanda exhaust became a big deal once blowing exhaust gases toward the diffuser at the back of the car became outlawed. Technical Regulation 5.8.4, which I highly recommend you all study thoroughly, mandates that there can be no aerodynamic devices in the exhaust flow. But as we have just shown, as we blew on the glass from the side, airflows can attach themselves to a curved surface and follow that curved surface. So the beauty of the Coanda effect is that you don't need to place any fins or any turning vanes in the exhaust flow to turn it. You can simply place a curved surface next to the flow, and the flow will bend itself around that surface. Brilliant! This allows exhaust gases to be bent around the Coke bottle back of the car and down between the wheels and the diffuser to enhance downforce. So once again, the teams have shown that they can overcome the FIA's regulations with engineering creativity. The Coanda effect also helps explain some other interesting sporting phenomena. Take golf, for example. Golf ball dimples are designed to create turbulent, bumpy air around the fast-moving ball in flight. The Coanda effect actually has an easier time bending this bumpy air around the ball. Smoother air has a harder time bending around the ball, and instead, it gets pushed out of the way, leaving a void behind the ball, which tries to suck the ball backwards and reduces its range. So, there you have it, there you go. Curved surfaces will bend a flow. Coanda. Cheers.
Thank you, Tim, and keep up an F1 Weekly good work.
Hi, my name is Linus Lundqvist, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Okay, folks, we're in beautiful Las Vegas with a young man from O Canada, Mr. Lance Stroll. Lance, welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
Thank you very much. I'm doing good today. It's been a good morning so far, and we were fastest this morning in warm-up, so... now we have the final to see, and the one that matters is this afternoon, and we'll see what the results are, but it's looking good so far.
Vegas is more famous for evening, so how was your evening yesterday?
I went to bed early. I didn't take too many. I didn't go out or anything like that. I'm a bit young for Las Vegas, but I'm here to race, and I have fun during the day. So.
Okay, cool. Yes, you are young, and at the age of 11, you became part of the Ferrari Driver Academy program. How did this deal come together? Did you send a text message to Luca Montezemolo?
No, they came to me at the race in Florida Winter Tour after, I think it was the second round. And they said they were interested, and I went to the factory and we discussed a little bit what my life was so far. And we went slowly and we signed a contract, and we will see in the future what happens with that. And that's how it went.
What was your first impression when you went to Maranello?
It's unbelievable how many people work just to win a Formula One race. It's unlike anything you've ever seen. You know, you go in there and it's so much history has been done there. So many cars have been made there. There's so many mechanics that are working for one driver to win the race. And it's really something unbelievable, and it's really something I hope to do one day.
And I understand once the word got out, Ferrari was interested in your services. McLaren team also tried to get you?
Well, that's different. The more McLaren was it more for Nyck de Vries, but my dad also knows a little bit. He's friends with Mansoor OJ, which is the owner of McLaren, so that was a bit different, but more Ferrari because it's complicated. I cannot give all the details, sure. But yes, of course, they were a little bit both, but much more Ferrari came to me instead of than McLaren.
Okay. Now, what is the main difference in the life of a young driver when you become part of, it doesn't have to be Ferrari, but any driver development program compared to if you were doing this on your own?
Well,
what do they bring to the table?
That's a very good question. It's it's up to the driver mostly to put himself in the position he wants to put himself. If the driver can put more pressure on himself if he would like to, and that's the driver's problem if he wants to do that. But it goes both ways, you know. You can be a driver that has a lot of pressure by getting signed by a Formula One team, or you could be a driver that has no pressure at all and continues doing what he loves to do. So it depends. But for me, I try to keep what I do before, and I try to put that on the side, and that's Ferrari gives me a program that I try to follow. But other than that, I do my work, stay the same, and I try my best I can, like always.
Okay, we just had another talented Canadian walk by, Robert Wickens. Are you friends with him?
Yeah, well, I talk to Robert sometimes. He's a great driver, and yeah, he's done DTM this year, and yeah, you can interview him if you want to.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, he's doing great, and we get along well. You know, we have a very similar lifestyle. He started at a very young age. He went to Europe just like me, and I hope to follow his footsteps one day. But hopefully, I would like to go to Formula One.
Great, great. Okay, by the age of 9, you were the big cheese in North American karting. I read you won like 70% of the races. Were you surprised that winning came so easily? Because winning is tough anywhere.
Winning is tough. Any day, I think the competition was much easier then than today. Of course, I was younger, and then I was less mature than I am today. But you know, it sometimes it comes and it goes. You have easy points, you have difficult points. If you look this year, I mean, it was a very difficult year. I won one race in WSK, and the most people only won two or one race. Everybody's like that. And when I raced in Canada, it was me and one driver. And what I do today, it's me and 30 drivers. You know, so. Yeah, then it was good, but I believe that if you go to any driver in the paddock, like Russell or anybody, when they were in their home country at the age of 9, they were winning also. So, you know, it's like that for everybody, but now I race against the best drivers in the world, and it's a different case, but I enjoy it very much.
Okay. So far in your young career, what has been your biggest success that you are, or accomplishment that you are really proud of?
Well, I won one international race this year, the WSK. And in Sarno, the second round. And I had the World Championship a few weeks ago, and that was great. I put pole position in the World Championship in KF3, and I won a few heats. I started pole for the pre-final, and yeah, it was a great weekend. And then in the final, it was unlucky. I got pushed off when I was in second position. But yeah, that's a great weekend, you know, karting. Many things can happen in go-karting, and you have to look not only at the results of the race, but you have to look at the results of the weekend, what you've done in the heats, what you've done in practice, what you've done in qualifying, because so many things can happen. But yeah, it's been a great season, and these are definitely one of my biggest accomplishments, because I'm coming to someone else's home, and I'm trying to do the best I can, not at my home, but someone else's, so yeah.
Now we see quite a bit in motor racing at different levels, karting and single-seaters also, when a young driver is really very good, like yourself, they are racing this season, but already their mind is on the next season and lose focus. How do you stay focused with all that pressure on you, on the job on hand?
Well, I have people also helping me a lot. I have Dino Keza, I have Hugo, that's my mechanic, and they help me a lot, you know, and they keep me on track, and I try to keep myself on track. And these are some of the things that a driver needs to work on himself, or someone needs to teach a driver. And this is how strong your mentality is, or this is how what you're focused on. And some people are focused on different things, but I try to stay focused. Every day is a new day. This is a race. This is the World Championship for me. Every race is a World Championship for me, and I try to do the best I can in every race.
Cool. And are you still based in Canada during the race, the racing season? Or Luca Montezemolo has bought you a flat in Maranello?
No. I live in Geneva, Switzerland now. So, moved. Yeah, exactly, because you cannot travel 7 hours every day to go. And I try to go to the factory quite often and everything. So, yeah, but I live in Geneva now, and it's much better because it's closer to a lot of the races, and I enjoy it very much there.
Have you ever run into Romain Grosjean or his beautiful wife at the local Geneva Starbucks?
No, not yet. I haven't. But I know where he goes to the gym. I try to go sometimes to get an autograph, but no, not yet.
Well, forget the autograph and get to know his wife. Okay. I asked you about Wickens. Are you in touch with Jacques Villeneuve also?
Yeah, Jacques was great. I think he's world champion. You could say he's one of the 45 or 50 world champions, so he definitely did a good job. But my real how do I say it? The one I looked up to was Gilles, the father of Jacques, and I never got to see him race, but unfortunately, but I always knew he always was on the limit, and these are the drivers I like, because if you look at what he's done so much and so little, and he was such a strong driver, and this I really appreciate what he's done, and I really believe in that he was a great driver, and also Jacques was a great driver, and I look up to them a lot.
Yeah, Gilles was very exciting. I remember his career very well. Okay, now, is Lance Stroll as good in school as he is on racing tracks?
I try my best. I try very hard in school. Maybe I'm not as good as the ones that go every day, but I try my best, and I need to keep up a good education. You know, it's part of the deal that I made with my parents, and it's part of the deal I made with Ferrari, and it's a very important thing because many things can happen. Maybe I won't be a racing driver in a few years, and I need to do something else in my life, so... You know, I try to keep up in school. Maybe I'm not the best, I have to admit it, but I try my hardest and I try to do the best I can, and that's what
At the Ferrari Cafe, have you ever had cappuccino with Nando?
No, I've seen him before, I've said hello. I think he's a bit busy in the races to say hello to me and have coffee with me, but no, I know him a little bit. I see him at the factory sometimes, and he seems like a really nice guy. Both of them, also Felipe.
Cool. Okay, how about a message for listeners? Our podcast is from California. We have listeners all over the world, quite a few in Canada. So how about a message for them, and tell them about your website also, please.
I don't have a website right now. You can just go on Ferrari. I'm sure they'll give you the news. www.ferrari.com. You go on the Driver Academy. And you'll find some news about what I've done. And you got to keep believing in what you do, and you got to have fun in what you do, you know. And in every situation, you got to win your day. And, you know, racing for me, it's not who I am. It's something I do, and I believe that should be for everybody. You shouldn't put it first. You should put, you know, I'm the son of Lawrence Stroll, or I'm the brother of Chloe Stroll, you know. And I love what I do, and everybody should love what they do. And I believe that's how you become the best.
And among the current F1 drivers, who do you like? Apart from the Ferrari drivers, of course.
I think I love Vettel. I think he's very good. I think also maybe the car is good, but that's what everybody says. So I think he's doing a great job. And he's world champion, so that means he's doing a great job. I also like Lewis, because Lewis came in the same footsteps as me with Dino Chiesa, and I've met him a few times, and he's a really nice guy. And I appreciate all the drivers in the front, because they've all worked very hard to get there, and I appreciate everything they've done. So, you know, I think I want to be like them, I hope. And then, I love them all. I think they're all very good.
When will we see Lance Stroll in a single-seater?
When you will see me in the single-seater, I don't know. You have to ask maybe Ferrari, or in a few years I will tell you, hopefully, but okay. We will see.
Do you own a European or Japanese vehicle and live in the New York tri-state area? Then I want to tell you about Bell Auto Care. Bell Auto Care is a Bosch-authorized repair shop with over 35 years of dedication in providing honest, friendly, and up-to-date repair and preventative maintenance to vehicles like yours and mine. Not only is this the shop in the New York area to take your European or Japanese car, they are F1 and MotoGP enthusiasts as well. So go to bellautocare.com to check out their special deals, F1 and MotoGP news, or for more information, and ring their bell to care for your car.
Cada día más a tu lado quiero vivir y luchar a los dos por el mismo amor. Cada día más y más.
Okay, let's go ahead and do 50 words from the forum.
Here is Desiree back again with 50 words on the 2013 Bahrain Grand Prix from our forum. First from Frank Douglasson. Rosberg, Vettel, and Alonso offer some fantastic dicing in the first three laps. Then the quality of racing tapers off mysteriously as DRS is enabled, and the Pirelli start degrading. Wheel-to-wheel racing doesn't return in earnest until the engineers take the leash off their drivers in the closing laps. And from Leon Bray. Strange race. Lots of overtaking, but not much excitement. Vettel cruises away at half a second a lap and gets told to slow down so it didn't look so easy.
Tires dictated the pace, and DRS made passing super easy, very artificial. The race was over when Fred's DRS malfunctioned. He looks like the only one capable of coming from behind and taking the fight to Fritz. And from R.O. Jackson. Aggressive driving by all. A series of unfortunate events for Ferrari. A race Nico would like to forget. By my observations, attendance at the race looked abysmal. And we have from Chemex with an add-on from Jackson. Mark Marquez continues to amaze in his rookie season with a fantastic display. Oops, wrong race, added Jackson, albeit a more interesting race. And here are my own words on the Bahrain Grand Prix. The desert is boring. The race seemed faked. My condolences to Nico and Fred. Happy to see the black and gold on the podium.
Thanks, everyone. Nas, another outstanding Motorsports Mondial, outstanding interview. It doesn't get better than this. Nas, I want you to have a pleasant afternoon. Thank you and good night.
Thank you and bye-bye.